again. So today I'm going to tell you a story, which probably might take 20 minutes. And I think it's cool. I invented it and it has dragon parts. It's kind of like a mystery. Maybe you can try it and do something. Like, there's questions. Maybe you could try and guess the answer to them. So, wait again. Once upon a time, there was an old village where I used to live. Oh, sorry, I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Elizabeth Jerry. So, what's your name? Coming in the adventure? Well, as I told you before, there was an old town where I used to live. So, I really miss that town. There was a mystery. We couldn't solve it. But suddenly, I managed to look closely inside. One stormy night, I woke up suddenly. I heard some growling and scratching on the floor, not below me, in the street. So I thought I could go check it out. I took a light, I went downstairs, opened the front door with a blanket, and searched. I found footprints, burning houses, and lots of things. Barns, animals stampeding anywhere they could hide from those terrible beasts. Suddenly, meat by claws or bitten by any other thing started floating in front of my own eyes, and one of those things just tried to snap at me. It went crunching into my face and it was so horrible. So I decided to run back home as fast as I could. I got into bed, but I couldn't sleep because of the scratches and growls and everything. So the next morning, I went out studying, and I decided I would be a detective. So, you could help me find. I went to there and there and gathered up some clues. What do you think I saw? The answer is, I saw lots and lots of dragon footprints. Nobody else saw them. But suddenly, a tiny little buzzing thing with bat-like wings, a little mouth, and a long, long tail with the end of it sharp as a knife, flew toward me and bit me on the tip of my nose, and it squealed, "Get out of here! It's our territory now, you dumb human!" I didn't know what was happening. I went back home running as fast as I could, and I hid under the bedclothes. Everybody that was there saw me run away from a little tiny thing that suddenly breathed fire, and somebody tried to catch it. It put it in a jar and filled it up with water. Then that person brought it to my house. I don't know how that happened, the person said, but it was awesome, girl. You You should do that more often. You could be an actress. Nah, just kidding, girl. Here you go, the jar with that little thing that bit you in the nose. I can see the mark on your nose, okay? Be careful, though. I suggest you don't come out at home. The truth is that I suspected somebody to come and kidnap me while I was asleep. Then somebody appeared out of nowhere. It was like a ghost. I can't believe that happened. So I decided to go and investigate. I didn't obey anybody. So I went running and running and running all the way across the streets and anywhere. So I decided to go run to the center of the town. I climbed up on St. George's horse, which was now with St. George clinging onto its tail and running at a terrific speed. The horse was galloping. And the horse suddenly became alive and stopped dead in its tracks. St. George was too heavy for it to lift up. He bit his tail, and suddenly, wow, that was a scene. I fell on its back and started galloping because of the fright that I had given the horse. St. George slipped off the horse's tail. The horse galloped all everywhere, and I decided that it would be better to use the time that I was having riding on a horse in the middle of the streets of the town to shout, "Hey! Something bit me on the nose. Now I've got it on my house. Come see. It'll take 1 year for you to come in and see it. I'm on a case, so be quick. Other people want to know, and I need to keep on with my case. Come on!" And lots of people came running and running and running and running beside me or after me. I started trotting, and they started running. Running. And then I went to pace along. They followed me walking. And then I decided to go back home. I parked that horse, which I named Fred. Funny name. And put it in the stable that I had for many years, because my parents were going to buy me a horse. But now I didn't need to. I had a horse of my own. And I told my parents. So, everything was okay. I suddenly discovered that what had bitten me was a dragon. And I went on telling everybody. The dragon suddenly, as I fed it meat, kept on growing and growing and growing until I had to put the little jar into a big, big plastic container. You know, the jar was one of those little tubes and started growing and growing and broke the little tube. Then it started growing again and again, and soon it became the size of my whole hand. Then it perched onto my shoulder. you something? And I asked, what can you toast for me? I have never had something toasted. You see, I was poor. Everybody in the village was except the mayor. He was very rich. And I really, 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 really wanted to be rich. And I was getting to be rich. And the dragon suddenly toasted. Said, toasts, warmed up some ham and bacon, then he cooked a soup for me and spread it everywhere. He drank of it for himself. He tasted it and said, delicious, try it yourself, mistress. I went and tried it. It was delicious. It tasted of meat and lots of other things. Meat, carrots. And then I wondered, did this dragon spit out? Because I fed it meat and carrots. Oh no. It had spit it out everywhere. No, 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 no. If you ate too much of it, you would faint. And then if you ate a lot more, you would die. Oh, I haven't eaten that much, maybe 2 spoons. Oh no, but if you ate 3, you would faint. And if you ate 5, you would die. The dragon drank it all, thank goodness. I tried the toast. It was good. It didn't taste no of meat nor carrots. It only had some ham, but it was okay. I ate it whole. Nothing happened. I went to bed because it was getting late. My parents called if I wanted to have anything else for dinner, and I said no. I slept soundly. But when I was sleeping, I felt something changing. My face turned into a snout and dragon ears. I had a long, long tail and feet and wings. I spread them wide across my bedroom. And then, whoosh, I went flying across the window and soared through the night air. Lots and lots of dragons followed me. They weren't as fast as I was. Even the fastest dragon couldn't catch up with me. I broke the limit. I was too fast for them all. So I slowed down so much that they skittered past me and had to stop, and I caught up with them in no time. We kept on flying, chatting and chanting, but nobody understood the dragons. That was weird. Did I have some enchantment that could talk to dragons and at the same time turn me into a dragon? Wow. If that was the case, then I had no idea what had happened. Did I drink? Oh, the soup suddenly came into my mind. Soup was magic soup. I couldn't believe I left that magic soup. I swooped back to my bedroom window. I saw the little dragon. That wasn't a dragon anymore. It was a human. in his hand. I woke up. I ran and ran and ran and ran. And the dragon now turned back into a dragon carrying a knife in his mouth, ran after me. I told everybody that morning. And they killed all the dragons. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening. I hope you'll like it. And keep on listening. Episode. Okay, so today we're gonna be reading. I'm gonna be reading you guys a book called Wings of Fire. I don't know if you've heard of this before, but it's basically a series with lots of dragons. It's basically just dragons. And this is going to be one chapter per episode, so hope you guys enjoy. This is the first book, which I've already read, so it's going to be a bit easier. And I don't know, but we're just going to be reading these books. Like, I've got the 1, the 2, the 3, the 4, 5, the 6, and the 7. So you guys are going to be enjoying all of those books. Okay, so let me read the back of the book to you. The dragonettes are coming to save the day. Play has lived his whole life under a mountain. The mudwing dragonette knows that a war is raging between the dragon tribes and the world outside. A war that he and four other dragonettes are destined to end. According to the mysterious prophecy they've been taught, the five chosen dragonettes were stolen from their homes. Well, they were stolen their eggs and hidden away for years, all to fulfill the prophecy. Not every dragonette wants a destiny. And when danger threatens, one of their own, Clay and his friend, may choose freedom or fate. Leave the mountain and set the dragon world on a course that no one could have predicted. Okay, so let's start the book. Okay, for Jonah, my little big wings. So here's a map that comes with the book. There's the Kingdom of Sand, which is the Sand Wings, and the Sand Wings Kingdom, the Ice Kingdom, which is the Ice Wings Kingdom, the Kingdom of Sea, which is the Sea Wings Kingdom, and then there's the Mud Kingdom, the Sky Kingdom, and the Rainforest Kingdom. So, let me introduce you guys. So, I'll read out the kind of dragons that there are. There's the Mud Wings, which have thick armored brown scales, sometimes with amber gold underscales. Large flat heads with nostrils on top of their snout. Okay, so that's the dragon, the one that we're gonna be inside of. So we're gonna be switching dragons. The next book is of a sea wing, and I'm gonna read you their abilities. They can breathe fire if warm enough, hold their breath up to an hour, and blend into large mud puddles, usually very strong. Now the Queen Morhen. Alliance is currently allied with Bern and the Sky Wings in the Great War. It has lasted for 20 years, let me say. There's a prophecy about it, so you guys are going to be here about that. Next up is the Sand Wings. They are pale gold or white scales, the color of the desert sand. Poisonous barbed tail, forked black tongues. So that's the Sand Wings, and they are pretty cool. So their poisonous barbed tail is mortal, so they sting you, like, they just, yeah, sting you. You die in about 5 seconds. If they scratch you, then you have a cure. They also have it in the desert. It's a cacti. I'm not going to be spoiling. Okay, so, no, I'm not. No, thank you. End it. Then, abilities. Can survive a long time without water. Poison enemies with the tips of their tails, like scorpions. Bury themselves for camouflage in the desert. And breathe fire. Since the death of Queen Oasis, the tribe is split between three rivals for the throne. Sisters, Burn, Blister, and Blaze. The ones that created the war. Okay, then alliances. Burn fights alongside the Sky Wings and Mud Wings. Blister is allied with the Sea Wings and Blaze, who is supportive of most Sand Wings, as well as an alliance with the Ice Wings. Okay, so we're already 6 minutes into the episode. I'm just going to read you the names of other things and their abilities. You guys can imagine that, and maybe if you go online, you can buy those books. So, there's also the Sky Wings, which are powerful fighters and flyers, and they can breathe fire. So, then the Sea Wings can breathe underwater and see in the dark. Create huge waves with one splash of their powerful tails. Excellent swimmers. Okay, so now the Rain Wings can camouflage their scales to blend with their own surroundings, using their prehensile tails for climbing. Known natural weapons. I know one, but I'm not gonna tell you guys. And now, the Ice Wings can withstand sub-zero temperatures and bright light exhale a deadly freezing breath. Okay, that's scary. And now, there's no Night Kingdom visible in the map. It's far away, so no spoiling the fun for you guys. Then the Night Wings, which can breathe fire, disappear into dark shadows, read minds, foretell the future. Cool powers, eh? Okay, now the Dragonette Prophecy. The Dragonette Prophecy. When the war has lasted 20 years, the dragonettes will come. When the land is soaked in blood and tears, the dragonettes will come. Find the sea-wing egg of deepest blue. Wings of night shall come to you. The largest egg in mountain high will give to you the wings of sky. For wings of earth search through the mud, for an egg the color of dragon blood, and hidden alone from the rival queens, the sandwing egg awaits unseen. Of the three queens who blister, blaze, and burn, two shall die, and one shall learn. If she bows to a fate that is stronger and higher, she'll have the power of wings of fire. 5 eggs to hatch on brightest night. 5 dragons born to end the fight. Dark darkness will rise to bring the light. The dragonettes are coming. Now, if you guys want to read the prologue, I'm guessing now, because there's actually a death. So no, I don't think you guys are gonna. Okay, so 60 years later, Clay didn't think he was the right dragon for a big heroic destiny. All he wanted to be. He wanted to be the great Mudwing savior of the dragon world, glorious and brave. He wanted to do all the wonderful things expected from him. He wanted to look at the world, figure out what was broken, and fix it. But he wasn't a natural hatched hero. He had no legendary qualities at all. He liked sleeping more than studying. He kept losing chickens in the caves during hunting practice because he was paying attention to his friends instead of watching for feathers. He was all right at fighting, but all right wasn't going to be to stop the war and save the dragon tribes. He needed to be extraordinary. He was the biggest dragonette, so he's supposed to be scary, the tough one. The Minders wanted him to be terrifyingly dangerous. Clay felt about as dangerous as a cauliflower. "Fight!" his attacker howled, flinging him across the cavern. Clay crashed into the rocky wall and scrambled up again, trying to spread his mud-colored wings for balance. Red talons wrecked at his face, and he ducked away. "Come on," the red dragon snarled. "Stop holding back. Find the killer inside you and let it out." "I'm trying," Clay said. "Maybe if we could stop and talk about it." She lunged for him again. "Feint to the left, roll right, use your fire." Clay tried to duck under her wing to attack her from below. But of course, he rolled wrong way. One of her talons smashed him to the ground and he yelped with pain. "Which left was that, useless?" Kestrel bellowed in his ear. "Are all mud wings these stupid, or are you just a deaf?" "Well, if you keep that up, I will be soon," Clay thought. The Skywing lifted her claws and he wriggled free. "I don't know about other mudwings," he protested, licking one of his sore talons. "Obviously, but perhaps we could try fighting without all that shouting and see." He stopped hearing the familiar hiss that came before one of Kestrel's fire attacks. He threw his wings over his head and ducked his long neck in and rolled into the maze of stalagmites that studded one of the corners of the cave. Flames blasted the rocks around him, singeing the tip of his tail. "Coward!" the other dragon bellowed. She smashed one of the raw columns into a shower of sharp black pebbles. Clay covered his eyes and almost immediately felt her stamp down hard on his tail. "Ow!" he yelled. "You said stomping tails was cheating!" He seized the closest stalagmite between his claws, scrabbled on top of it. From his perch near the roof, he glared down at his guardian. "I'm your teacher," Kestrel snarled. "Nothing I do is cheating. Get down here and fight like a Skywing." "But I'm not a Skywing," Clay thought rebelliously. "I'm a Mudwing. I don't like seeing things on fire or flapping around in circles, biting dragon necks. His teeth still ached from Kestrel's jeweled hard scales. Can't I fight one of the others? I'm much better at that. The other dragonettes were his own size, nearly. They didn't cheat. Well, most of the time, he actually liked fighting with them. Oh, yes? Which opponent would you prefer? The stunted sandwing or the lazy rainwing? Kestrel said, because I'm sure you'll get to choose out on the battlefield. Her tail glowed like embers as she lashed it back and forth. Glory's not lazy, Clay said loyally. She's just not built for fighting, that's all. Webbs says there's not much to fight about in the rainforest because rainwings have all the food they want. He says that's why they stayed out of the war so far. Because none of the rival queens want to rainwings in their armies anymore. He says, stop yammering and get down here, Kestrel roared. She reared up on her back legs and flared her wings so she suddenly looked three times bigger. With a yelp of alarm, Clay tried to leap to the next stalemate, but his wings unfurled too slowly and he smacked into the side of it instead. Sparks flew as his claws scraped down the jagged rock. He let out another yowl of pain as Kestrel snapped her head between the columns and seized his tail in her teeth. And yet, out of the into the open, his tail, her talons closed around his neck, and she hissed in his ear. Where's the violent little monster I saw when you hatched? That's the dragon we need for the prophecy. Gulp. Clay squawked, clawing at her grip. He couldn't feel the strange burns or scars on her palms scraping against his scales. This was how battle training with Kestrel always ended, with him unconscious and the sword limping, and then sword limping 4 days afterward. Fight back, he thought. Get mad, do something. But although he was biggest of the dragonettes, they were still a year away from being full grown. Kestrel towered over him. He tried to summon some helpful violent rage, but all he could think was, it'll be over soon and then I can go have dinner. So not the most heroic train of thought. Suddenly, Kestrel let out a roar and dropped him. Fire blasted over Clay's head and he hit the floor with a thud. The red dragon whirled around. Behind her, panting differently, was the sea-wing dragon. Tsunami. A red gold scale was caught between her sharp teeth. She spat it out and glared at their teacher. Stop picking on Clay, Tsunami growled. Or I'll butt you again. Her deep blue scales shimmered like cobalt glass in the torchlight. The gills in her long neck were pulsing like they'd always did when she was angry. Kestrel sat back and flicked her tail around to examine the bite mark. She bared her teeth at Tsunami. Aren't you sweet, protecting a dragon who tried to kill you while you were still in an egg? But luckily, you big dragons were there to save our lives, Tsunami said. And we're appreciated because now we get to hear about it all the time. She marched around to stand between Clay and Kestrel. Pappy winced. He hated hearing this story. He didn't understand it. He never want to hurt the other dragonettes, so why had he attacked their eggs during hatching? Did he really have a killer monster inside him somewhere? The other minders, Webb and Dune, said he'd been ferocious when he hatched. They'd had to throw him in the river to protect the other eggs from him. Kestrel wanted him to find that monster and use it when he fought. But he was afraid he never did. He would hate himself, and so would everyone else. Thinking about that he'd nearly done to his friends made him feel all the fire had been sucked out of him. He didn't particularly want to be a violent, angry monster. Even if Kestrel thought that would be an improvement, maybe that was the only way to make the prophecy come true. Maybe the monster was his destiny. "All right," Kestrel said dismissively. "We're finished here anyway. I'll mark another failure in your skull." Muttering, she snorted a small flame into the air and slipped out of the cave. Clay flopped down on the floor as soon as her red tail had vanished from sight. It felt like every one of his scales was stinging from the burns. "She's going to be so mean to you during your training tomorrow," he said to Nami. "Oh no," the ceiling dragonettes gasped. "I've never seen Kestrel be mean before. That'll be so unexpected. Out of character." "Ow," Clay groaned. "He didn't make me laugh. I think my ribs are broken." "Your ribs are not broken," Chinami said, poking him in the side with her nose. "Dragon bones are almost as hard as diamonds. You'll be fine. Get up and jump in the river." "No," Clay burrowed his head under his wing. "Too cold. Jump in the river," was Tsunami's solution to everything. Bored, aching bones, dry scales, brain stuffed with a history of war, jump in the river, she'd shout whenever any of the other dragonettes complained. She certainly did not care if there was only one who could breathe underwater. Most of the other dragons hated getting wet. Clay didn't mind being wet, but he couldn't stand being cold, and the underground river that flowed through their home was always freezing. "Get in," Tsunami said, or rather ordered. She seized his tail between her front talons and started dragging him toward the river. "You'll feel better." "I will not," Clay shouted, clawing at the smooth stone floor. "I'll feel colder. Stop it. Go away." "Ah!" His protests went up in the cloud of bubbles as Tsunami dumped him in the icy water. When he resurfaced, she was floating beside him, ducking her head and splashing water over her scales like a beautiful overgrown fish. Clay felt like a gawky brown blob next to her. He splooshed into the shallows and lay down on the submerged rock. With his head resting on the bank of the river, he wouldn't admit it, but the burns and aches did feel better in the water. The current helped wash away the smoky rock just caught between his dry scales. "Still too cold, though," Clay scratched the rock below him. "Why couldn't there just be a little mud down there?" Kisser will be sorry one day when I clean up the sea wings. Tsunamis sit swimming up and down the narrow channel. I thought only a queen's daughter or sister could challenge her for the throne, said Clay. Tsunami swam too fast. He wished he had webs between his talons, or gales, or a tail like hers, so powerful she could nearly empty the river with one big splash. Well, maybe the sea wing queen is my mother, and I'm the lost princess, she said. Like in the story, everything the dragonettes knew about the outside world came from scrolls picked up by the Talons of Peace. Their favorite was the missing princess, a legend about a runaway sea wing dragonette whose royal family tore up the whole ocean looking for her. At the end, she found the way home, and her parents welcomed her with open wings and feasting and joy. Clay always skipped the adventures in the middle of the story. He just liked that part. The happy mother and father and the feasting is sounding pretty great too. I wonder what my parents are like. I wonder if any of our parents are still alive, Tsunami said. Clay didn't like to think about that. He knew dragons were dying in the war every day. Kestrel and Webbs brought back news of bloody battles, scorched land, and burning piles of dragon bodies. But he had to believe his parents were still safe. Do you think they ever miss us? Definitely. Tsunami picked a spray of water at him with her tail. I bet mine were frantic when Webb stole my egg, just like in the story. And mine tore apart the marshes. They all imagined scenes of their parents desperate for searches ever since they were young dragonettes. Clay liked the idea that someone out there was looking for him, that someone missed him and wanted him back. Tsunami flipped onto her back, gazing up at the stone roof with her translucent green eyes. Well, the Talons of Peace knew what they were doing, she said bitterly. No one could ever find us down here. They listened to the river gurgle and the torches crackle for a moment. We won't be underground forever, Clay said, trying to make her feel better. I mean, if the Talons of Peace wanted us to stop the war, they'd have to let us out sometime. He scratched behind his ear thoughtfully. Starfleet says there's only 2 more years. He could only have had to hold on to that long. And then we can go home and eat as many cows as we want. We'll first need to save the world, Tsunami said. And then we go home. Right, said Clay. They were going to save the world was a little fuzzy, but everyone seemed to think they'd figure it out when the time came. Clay pulled himself out of the river, his waterlogged wings heavy with and drooping. He spread them in front of one of the torches, aching, arching his neck and trying to get them warm. Feeble waves of heat wafted against his scales. Unless, Tsunami said. Clay lowered his head to look at her. Unless what? Unless we leave sooner, she said. She flipped over and pulled herself out of the water in one graceful motion. "Leave?" Clay echoed, startled. "How? On our own?" "Why not?" she said. "If we can find a way out, why should we have to wait another 2 years? I'm ready to save the world right now. Aren't you?" Clay wasn't sure he'd ever be ready to save the world. He figured the Talons of Peace would tell him that they had to do. Only 3 guardian dragons, Kestrel, Webbs, and Dune, knew where the dragonets were hidden. But there was a whole network of Talons out there getting ready for the prophecy. "We can't stop the war ourselves," he said. "We won't know where to start." Tsunami flapped her wings at him in exasperation, showering him with cold droplets. "We can, too, stop the war on our own," she said. "That's the whole point of the prophecy." "Maybe in 2 years," Clay said, "maybe by then I'll have found my dangerous side. Maybe then I'll be the ferocious fighter Kestrel wants me to be. Maybe soon," she said stubbornly. "Just think about it, all right?" He shifted his feet. "All right, I'll think about it. At least that way we can stop arguing with her." Tsunami cocked her head. "I think I hear dinner." The faint sound of dismayed mooing echoed up the tunnel. Behind them, she poked Clay cheerfully. "Race you to the hall," she said. She whirled and pounded away without waiting for a response. The torches in the battle room seemed dimmer. Cold water was seeping under Clay's scale. He folded his wings and swept his tail through the debris of the smashed rock column. Tsunami was crazy. The 5 dragonets weren't ready to stop the war yet. They wouldn't even know how to survive on their own. Maybe Tsunami was brave and tough like a hero should be, but Sunny and Glory and Starflight quite thought of them all. The things that might hurt them and wished he could protect them on his own. Scales and claws and teeth for extra protection. Besides, there was no way to escape the caves. The Talons of Peace made sure of that. Still part of him could not help wondering what it would be like to go home now instead of waiting for another 2 years. Back to the marshes, to the swamps, to the whole tribe of Mudwings who looked like him and thought like him. Back to his parents, whoever they were. What if they could do it? What if the dragonets could escape and survive the world on their own way? So that was chapter 1 of Wings of Fire, book 1. So hope you enjoyed it. Keep listening for more and send a comment down below. Good weekend. See you. Goodbye. Hello, guys, and welcome to a new episode. Today we are going to be, as I said the last episode, I am going to be reading to you guys, chapter 2 of Wings of Fire. So, hope you enjoy, and let's start. Maybe if you remember in the last episode, Clay wanted to get out. Clay wanted to get out, and everybody wanted. So let me remind you that their names: Clay is a Mudwing, Dragonette. Glory is a Rainwing Dragonette. Tsunami is a Z-Wing Dragonette. Then there is Starflight, a Nightwing Dragonette. Sunny, a Sandwing Dragonette. And that's all. So let's start. Clay slipped the bones of dinner into the river with his tail. The striped white shapes bounced away in the current. Fires flickered around the edges of the great central cave, echoing space yawned overhead, dripping with stalactites like huge teeth. The cave dome was big enough for 6 full-grown dragons to fit across with their wings extended. The underground river flowed along one wall, muttering and gurgling as if it were plotting its own escape. Clay glanced at the 2 small sleeping caves that opened into the hall, currently empty, and wondered where the other dragonettes had gone while he was cleaning up. "Aha!" yelled a voice behind him. Clay threw his wings over his head. "What did I do?" he yelped. "I'm sorry. It was an accident. Or if it's the extra cow, Dune said I could have it because the webs would be out late. But I'm sorry, and I can skip dinner tomorrow." A small snout poked his back between his wings. "Calm down, silly," Sunny said. "I wasn't a-hung at you." "Oh," Clay smoothed his crest and twisted around to look at her. The smallest and last hatched of the dragonettes, a pale lizard tail was disappearing into her mouth. She grinned at him. "That was my fierce hunting cry. Did you like it? Wasn't it scary?" "Well, it was certainly surprising," he said. "Lizards again? What's wrong with cows?" "Bleach too heavy," she said. "You look all serious." "Just thinking." He was glad Kestrel and Dune couldn't leave him alone inside Nightwing Dragonette. Poor dragons. He hadn't been able to stop thinking about the idea of escape all through dinner. Clay lifted one of his wings and Sunny nestled in close. He could feel the warmth from her golden scales radiating along his side. Sunny was too small and the wrong color. Tawny golden stars stand pale like most sand things, but she gave off heat like the rest of her tribe. "Dune says we should go study for an hour before bed," she said. "The others are in the study cave already. Dune, the maimed dragon who taught them survival skills, was a sandwing, and so was Sunny." Nevertheless, there was something not quite right about that little dragonette. Not only were her scales too golden, but her eyes were gray instead of glittering black. Worst of all, her tail curled into an ordinary point, like the tails of most dragons' tribes, instead of ending with the poisonous barb that was a sandwing's most dangerous weapon. As Kestrel often said, Sunny was completely harmless. And what good was a harmless dragon? But her egg fit the instructions in the prophecy, so it was their wings of sand, whether the towns of Kisk liked it or not. Of course, there were no wings of rain in the prophecy at all. The Dragonets had all heard many times over about how glory was a last-minute substitute for the broken Skywing Egg. Kestrel and Dune call her a mistake and growled at her a lot. Nobody knew whether the prophecy could still happen with a rainwing instead of a Skywing. But from what Queen knew of Skywings, he was very glad they had glory instead of another grumpy fire-breathing Kestrel under the mountain. Besides, if anyone was likely to mess up the prophecy, it was Rosehill, not Lori or Sunny. "Come on," Sunny said, flicking him with her tail. He followed her across the central cave, twisting stone tunnels led off in four directions. One to the battle area, one to the guardian's cave, and one to the guardian's cave, one to the study room, and one to the outside world. The last was blocked with a boulder far too big for any of the dragonets to move. Clay stopped and pushed against the rock with his shoulder as they went by. He often tried to open it with the big dragons weren't around. Someday it will move, and when it did that, maybe not a lot, but even at the tiniest shift would let him know he was finally getting close to full grown. He felt big. He was constantly bumping into things by accident, knocking stuff over with his tail or wings. "Not today," he thought ruefully. When the boulder didn't budge, maybe tomorrow. He followed Sunny down the tunnel to the study room. His enormous feet and thick claws thumped and scraped along the stone floor. Even though he'd lived under the mountain his whole life, it still hurt to walk on bare rock. He was constantly stubbing his tongue, and they always ached by the end of the day. Tsunami was strutting around the inn, around the study cave, barking orders. Sunny and Clay sat down by the entrance, folding their wings back. A breath of air drifted down from the hole in the roof, far overhead. The only window to the outside in any of the caves at night with out the distant hint of sunlight, the room felt colder and more hollow. Clay stretched up and sniffed the darkness that had fallen on the other side of the hole. He thought it smelled like stars. A map of Peria hung on the wall between the torches. Tsunami and Starlight love staring at the map, trying to figure out where their hidden cave was. Starflight was pretty sure they were somewhere under the clouds of the clouds mountains. Skywings preferred to live high among the peaks, so anything could happen in the deep caves below without being noticed. All this story history is so confusing, Sunny murmured to Clay, swishing her tail back to push. Why don't the three sides just sit down and talk out an end to the war? That would be great, Clay said, and then we could stop studying it. Sunny giggled. "Stop that," Tsunami said bossily, stamping her feet at them. "No whispering. Pay attention. I'm assigning parts." "This is not proper studying," Starflight pointed out. His black Nightwing scales made him nearly invisible in the dark shadows between the torches. He swept a few scrolls between his talons and began to neatly sort them into stacked triangles. Perhaps I should read to everyone instead? Dear moons, anything but that, Glory said from the ledge above him. Maybe later when we're trying to fall asleep? A long, delicate snout, glowing emerald green with displeasure, rested on her front claws. Ripples of iridescent blue shimmered across her scales. And tonight, her tail was a swirl of vibrant purples. If it weren't for Glory, Clay thought, none of them would know how many colors there were in the world. He wondered what it must be like in the rainforest, where there was a whole tribe of dragons that beautiful. Shush, Tsunami scolded. Now obviously I'd be the best queen, but let's make Sunny the queen, since she's a real sanguine. She bustled over and pushed Sunny into the center of the cave. Well, sort of, Glory muttered under her breath. Hist! Starflight flicked her tail with it. None of the dragonets ever talked about why Sunny didn't look like a regular dragonet from the Sandwing tribe. Clay guessed it was their egg had been taken from the sand too early. Maybe Sandwing eggs needed the sun and desert sand to keep them warm until hatching, or else they'd come out half-baked and funny-looking. Although, personally, he thought Sunny looked just fine. Tsunami tapped her talons on the cave floor, studying her friends. Clay, you want to play the scavenger? That's hardly fair, Starflight pointed out. He's twice the size, according to this scroll over here. It says that scavengers have no scales, no wings, and no tail. They walked on two legs, which sounds very unstable to me. I bet they fall over all the time. They like treasure nearly as much as dragons do. The scrolls say scavengers attack lone dragons and steal. Oh my gosh, we know! Glory snapped. We were all there from the fascinating lectures about them. Don't make me come down there and bite you, Starflight. I'd like to meet a real scavenger, Clay said. I'd rip off its head and eat it. He pounced his front talons on the stone below him. I bet it would taste better than mouthfuls of feathers Kestrel keeps bringing us. Poor hungry Clay, Sunny teased. When we're free, we'll go find a scavenger nest and eat them all. All, absolutely all of them. Tsunami promised, nudging Clay with one wing. Sunny blinked at her. When we're free? Oops. Tsunami and Clay exchanged glances. Sunny was sweet, interesting, and absolutely terrible at keeping secrets. I mean, after we fulfill the prophecy, of course. Tsunami said, Clay, be the scavenger. Here, this can be yours. He swung her long tail in an arc and smashed a stalagmite loose. Shards of rock flew across the cave, and the other dragonets ducked. Clay hefted the sharp rock spear in his claws and grinned wickedly at Sunny. Don't actually hurt me, please, she said nervously. Of course he won't. Tsunami said, "We're just acting it out. And the rest of us will be the princesses. I'll be Burn, Cory can be Blister, and Starflight will be Blaze. I had to be a princess last time too," Starflight observed. "I'm not sure this is a game." He stretched his wings and scattered. The scattered silver scales underneath glittered like stars in the night sky. Starflight shrugged and settled back into the shadows the way he did when he couldn't win a fight. "Alright, go ahead," Tsunami said, hopping onto the ledge next to Cory. Sunny said. She eyed Clay warily. "Right here I go, la la la. Queen Oasis of the Sand Dunes, I'm so very important and royal and stuff." Tsunami said, "Glory and Starflight hit their smiles. I've been queen for ages and ages," Sunny went on. She strutted across the cave floor. "No one dares challenge me from my throne. I am the strongest Sandwing queen who ever lived." "Don't forget the treasure," Tsunami hissed, pounding at a pile of loose rocks. "All right," Sunny said. "It's probably because of all my treasure. I have so much treasure because I'm such an important queen." She swept the rocks towards her and gathered them between her talons. "Did someone say treasure?" Clay bellowed, leaping out behind a large rock formation. Sunny yelped with fright. "No," Tsunami called. "You're not scared. You're Queen Oasis, the big, bad queen of the Sandwings, Sunny." "Right," Sunny said. "Raw. What's this tiny scavenger doing in my kingdom? I am not afraid of tiny scavengers. I shall go out there and eat him in one bite." Glory started giggling so hard she had to lie down and cover her face with her wings. Even Tsunami was making faces like she was trying not to laugh. Clay swung his stalagmite in a circle. "Squeak, squeak, squeak," he shouted, and other annoying scavenger noises. "I'm here to steal treasure away from a magnificent dragon." "Not from me, you won't," Sunny said, bristling. She stamped forward, spreading her wings and raising her tail threateningly. Without the poisonous barb other Sunnies had, Sunny's tail was not very menacing, but nobody pointed it out. "Yah!" Clay shouted, lunging forward with his rock claw. Sunny darted out of the way, and they circled each other, feinting and jabbing. This was Clay's favorite part, when Sunny forgot about trying to act queenly and focused on the battle. She was fun to fight. Her small size made it easy for her to dodge and slip under defenses. But in the end, Queen Oasis had to lose. That was how the story went. Clay drove Sunny back against the wall of the cave and thrust the fake claw between her neck and her wing, pretending it was right through her heart. "Arr!" Sunny hauled. "Impossible! A queen defeated by a lowly scavenger. The kingdom of sand will fall apart. Oh, my treasure, my lovely treasure." She collapsed onto the ground and let her wings flop lifelessly on either side of her. "Ha, ha, ha," Clay said, and squeak, squeak. The treasure is mine. He scooted all the rocks up and paraded away, lashing his tail proudly. Our turn, Tsunami said, jumping out of the ledge. She hurried over to Sunny, clasped her talons together, and let out a cry of anguish. Oh no, our mother is dead, and the treasure is gone. But worst of all, none of us killed her, so who should be the queen now? Guys, sorry for interrupting, but I think we can keep on another day. Remind me, please, in the chat. We're on page 2120. So, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed. And happy Christmas, by the way. There's only 1 week left. So, goodbye and enjoy Christmas holidays. Hello, guys. Welcome to a new episode. Today, we're not going to be reading Wings of Fire. We're just going to do a Christmas special. Maybe we can just do some activities. I know you guys can't really do that, but I'll do them, tell you what you need, and then you can do those at home. Lovely Christmas decorations you can do easily with things that you have lying around at home and that turn out really great for being with such tiny materials. So let's get started. Today I'm just here in my school walking around with the recording, and now we can just start. I'm here. So I'm just going to take some paper and scissors. That's all we need for our first activity. So, what we're gonna do, I took a bad paper.
Let's see if I can find one that's not just like hard or anything.
Okay, let's get started. So with these, we are going to need to cut out a circle. So take something around the side of what you wanted to make. So I'm just going to take a medium one over here, a medium cup bowl, and some pencil. So let's start. Now we just want to make this circle there as perfectly as we can. So, our activity ends up looking so good. So, the bowl is actually filled with paper. Sorry, pencil thing leftover, so it ended up all on my papers. Yeah. Okay, now we cut out that circle. And we're gonna cut it in half once we... don't cut it in half. Go ahead and fold it in here. Put away the paper and fold our circle in half. There we go. And now that half circle in half, so we have a quarter. Now we're just going to do some crazy cuttings. Wherever we want, we're free to do whatever you've always liked to do. Just little cuts here and there. Just so we have random shapes. I'm gonna check out how it's doing. You can just open it up and you'll have random cuts everywhere, which will look pretty cool on a Christmas tree. If you want to, you can just fold that quarter in half so you got an even smaller piece. And you can do even more things. So this is actually just going to look real cool, like a snowflake on the Christmas tree. I know, it's just 2 days before Christmas Eve. You guys just have fun. Have fun, enjoy Christmas. Do what you want, enjoy every single little bit with your families. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I'm still missing you guys. Mine's finished, and wow, it looks pretty cool. So sad I can't show it to you guys. So sad. But it looks real cool. I just did some little hearts on the sides. And yeah, looks real cool. And you can just hang that up on the Christmas tree with some string. And it'll look real cool, and besides, you can put a little colorful paper on the inside. And if you have your Christmas tree by side of inside by a window, you can see some paint, some of the paper go through with the sunlight and project lovely colorful things on the floor with shapes. It'll look really nice on your Christmas tree. I think that's gonna be it for today. Just a 7-minute episode. So you guys enjoy Christmas. I hope you enjoy your presents. And goodbye.